Good afternoon, and welcome to the Tompkins County Legislature. Today is Tuesday, May 3rd. It's 5:30 p.m., and I would like for you to join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of members.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Greg Mezzi.
Here.
Veronica Piller.
Here.
Lee Shurtleff.
Here.
Mike Sigler will be arriving later this evening. Travis Brooks. Sorry, Mike. Travis Brooks. Randy Brown.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison will be arriving later this evening as well. Rich John.
Here.
Dan Klein is asked to be excused.
Dan made it. I'm sorry. I forgot to tell you. No change.
Just making it lively for Kathy tonight.
Ann Corman. Granison will be arriving later this evening.
I'll be arriving later this evening, but I'm also here now. Present.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Okay, I think we have 12 members present.
Thank you. We're going to start the afternoon off with a few proclamations. And our first proclamation, we have Yael Sar here. And she is here to accept this proclamation this afternoon. I'm going to go ahead and read the proclamation. Whereas caregivers are defined as people who are responsible for taking care of other people, the community, and the planet, thus enabling humanity and society to exist. And whereas, by this definition, the term caregivers includes parents, guardians, teachers, child care providers, healthcare workers, social workers, those working with our youth, those caring for our elders, those caring for the ill or the disabled, all those caring for friends and loved ones near and far, farmers who grow our food, and the many service providers who bring forth food from the earth to every table. Those who provide frontline services such as bank tellers and hospitality workers, and those who support emotional nourishment through the creation of art and music. And whereas the pandemic has taken a high toll on those caregivers, leading to an unprecedented prevalence of anxiety, depression, overwhelm, burnout, and financial hardship in the very people who are instrumental in keeping our community functioning. And whereas our current economic system neglects caregivers by relying on them to give freely of their time and accept inadequate pay, causing many to work multiple jobs and still struggle to provide for their families. And in the pandemic, we have heard these vital caregivers referred to as heroes, which is inadequate compensation for the work they do and sacrifices they have made. And whereas we recognize that it is only when we shift our priorities from short-term profit for the few to long-term nurturing for all that we may heal from the effects of the global pandemic, and in a community where mothers and caregivers are supported emotionally and physically, all will be seen, heard, and held, and humanity may not just survive but thrive. And whereas we call our community to action and to recognize the question, how are the caregivers, as a cornerstone of how we make decisions and allocate resources. Now, therefore, I, Shauna Black, chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim this Saturday, May 7th, as How Are the Caregivers Days. And henceforth declare the Saturday immediately preceding Mother's Day as a day for celebrating the voices of mothers and caregivers. In witness whereof, I, Shauna Black, have hereunto set my hand and cause to be affixed the Great Seal of Tompkins County, State of New York, on this third day of May 2022.
Oh my God, thank you so much. 10 years ago, I created Mama's Comfort Camp because I was finally no longer depressed with postpartum depression. After the birth of this guy who is now a senior in high school. A few years later, I was able to start a social media group called Mama's Comfort Camp. In it, we help mother dealing with postpartum depression, but we also recognize that postpartum depression is a normal reaction to the unsupported state of motherhood in our community. The pandemic has made it very clear that it's not just mothers who are unsupported, it's everyone who does caregiving of any kind. You too are not supported enough with the work that you do. And we're trying to change that. And advocacy should come with joy and not just consternation. So we are doing a day of celebration, and I invite you to join us on Friday. You can choose any time within this 9-hour span of 1 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. We'll have music for children and adults and dancing in the streets. There's an optional choreography for We Are Family. There's also a 1-hour poetry reading in tribute of Kirby Edmonds. Poets from the community will be celebrating his life and work. And the cherry on top of the event is Motherhood is a Joke, Season 3, in which the special guest of honor is Ms. Leslyn McBean Claiborne. And so she will open, and older person Phoebe Brown will close. So please join us. That's at 6. If you arrive a few minutes early, you might hear Shauna. No, someone will read this. And you can get chocolate cake. That is our 10th anniversary chocolate cake is courtesy of Rashida Sawyer. So if comedy won't get people to come out, I bet it will be the chocolate cake. Cross your fingers for sunshine. But we have a wonderful rain location right next door, courtesy of the good folks at the Sacred Root Kava Bar. And I thank you for your work and for your support and for everything that you do for our community. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Yael. You have been definitely a light for many women here in our community, and your commitment to being open about postpartum depression and mental health has been extremely significant, and I applaud your commitment. So thank you.
Okay. Next, we have a resolution for the Asian Pacific Islander American Heritage Month. And we have joining us Dr. Josephine Chu and Cynthia Orsi. They're right here. And we have a proclamation. Whereas Jeannie Zhu, a former congressional staffer in the 1970s, first approached Representative Frank Horton of the idea of designating a month to recognize Asian Pacific Americans following the nation's bicentennial celebrations. And whereas in 1977, Representatives Horton and Norman Y. Mineta introduced a United States House of Representatives resolution to proclaim the first 10 days of May as Asian Pacific Heritage Week. Later, a similar bill was introduced by Senators Daniel Inouye and Spark Matsunaga to change from a week to a month, and on May 1st, 2009, President Obama issued a presidential proclamation which recalls the challenges faced by Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders and celebrates their great and significant contributions to our society. And whereas the vast diversity of languages, religions, and cultural traditions of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders strengthens the fabric of American society, from the arrival of the first Asian American and Pacific Islander immigrants to those who arrive today, as well as those native to the Hawaiian Islands and to our Pacific Island territories, all possess the common purpose of leading a life bound by the ideals of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And whereas Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have endured and overcome hardship and heartache, in the earliest years, tens of thousands of gold rush pioneers, coal miners, transcontinental railroad builders, as well as farm and orchard laborers, were subject to unjust working conditions, prejudice, and discrimination. Even in the darkness of the Exclusion Act and Japanese internment, Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have persevered, providing for their families and creating opportunities for their children. And whereas amidst these struggles, Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have contributed in great and significant ways to all aspects of society. They have created works of literature and art, thrived as American athletes, and prospered in the world of academia.
And whereas Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have played a vital role in our nation's economic and technological growth by establishing successful enterprises and pushing the limits of science, they are serving in positions of leadership within the government now more than ever before. And along with all of our great servicemen and women, they have defended the United States from threats at home and abroad, serving our nation with valor. And whereas Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have persevered despite anti-Asian sentiment that has surged throughout the COVID-19 pandemic and as a result of racism, misinformation, and xenophobia. And whereas the theme for Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month 2022 is advancing leaders through collaboration, and local and national governments are encouraged to prioritize collaboration, development, diversity, transparency, and inclusion through leadership, training of Asian and Pacific Island people, and whereas Asian and Pacific Islanders make up 17.2% of residents in the city of Ithaca and 10.5% of Tompkins County residents, contributing to the intellectual, academic, literary, cultural, and economic vibrancy and diversity of our community with art, businesses, shops, restaurants, and festivals, celebrating cultures, cuisines, and events from regions across Asia and the Pacific. Now, therefore, I, Shauna Black, Chairwoman of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim the month of May 2022 as Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Month in Tompkins County, and that together with our entire community, we join in celebration and recognition of the Asian and Pacific Islander American community. In witness whereof, I have hereto set my hand and caused the great soul of the County of Tompkins to be affixed this on the third day of May in the year of 2022.
Hi, I'm Josie McAllister from the Ithaca Asian American Association. I and Cynthia Orsi, on behalf of the Ithaca Asian American Association, would like to thank the Tompkins County Legislature for this proclamation and acknowledging the contributions of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. Particularly during a time of renewed xenophobia, we welcome this proclamation, which affirms our role as essential members of American society. Our people have survived genocide, wars, displacement, and racism. We've tasted bitterness and suffered in silence while working for the greater good of our community and the next generation. This is our home, too. This is the country we together have helped to build, and we are happy to be here. This proclamation gives us hope that someday our country will live up to its stated ideals of life, liberty, and happiness for all people. I look forward to seeing that day together with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. We appreciate your work. We also have a third proclamation this evening. I'm not going to read the full proclamation, but we did want to recognize that School Nurse Day is Wednesday, May 11th, and thank all of our school nurses that provide help for our children. It has been one heck of the past 2 years, and they come to work day in and day out. And COVID has definitely made their jobs much harder. So we would like to recognize them. We will send their proclamation to them in the mail. Next up, we are announcements of executive session. We are not going to have an executive session this evening. I know everyone's disappointed. And we are going to reorder some of the business. I would like to move the consent agenda up in our agenda right after public comment so that our staff can leave if they need to. Now I would like to open the privilege of the floor for any public comment. Kathy, do we have anyone via Zoom?
No, there were no requests.
Okay. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak on privilege of the floor? Okay. I see no one. Let's go ahead and move to the consent agenda.
And the consent agenda, resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group, unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. Advisory board appointments, there are two of them. To the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Jeremiah Swain, at-large member. His term expires December 31st, 2022. Terry Tarshis, at-large member. Term expires December 31st, 2024. Public Safety Committee, Resolution A, reappropriation of Park Foundation grant for benefit of the drug courts of Tompkins County, ID 10741. Health and Human Services, Resolution B, budget transfers across budgeting units, Mental Health Clinic, 4311, Personal Recovery Oriented Services, 4312, and Health Home, 4330. Mental Health Department, ID 10863. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution C, establishing an air carrier incentive program, Ithaca Tompkins International Airport, ID 10873.
I'd like to pull that.
Okay, we're going to pull that resolution. Resolution D, award of contracts for rental car concessions, Ithaca Tompkins International Airport, ID 10838. Resolution E, award of bid, exterior landscaping and snow removal services, Ithaca Tompkins International Airport, ID 10835. Resolution F, approve a funding agreement with the New York State Department of Transportation for PIN 3756.97, replacement of Podunk Road Bridge, CR 146, over Tagannock Creek, Town of Ulysses, 10884. Resolution G, approve a design services contract with Labella Associates, DPC, for PIN 3756.97, replacement of Podunk Road Bridge, CR 146, over Tagannock Creek, Town of Ulysses, ID 10885. Resolution H, allocating 2021 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307, Coronavirus Aid, Relief and Economic Security Acts, CARES Act, Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act, and the American Rescue Plan Act, funding for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, TCAT, Gadabout, and Tompkins County, ID 10895. Resolution I, budget adjustment, transportation, A5631, Federal New York State Aid and Contract Services, ID 10897, Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee. Resolution J, award of 2022 Tompkins Outdoors Grant, ID 10859. Resolution K, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2022, appropriating funds for the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the acquisition of the Bell Station property, ID 10853. Resolution L, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the acquisition of the Bell Station property, ID 10852. Resolution M, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2022, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the acquisition of the Lick Brook at Route 13 Gateway property, ID 10854.
Can we pull that last one in?
Okay. And we have one more. N, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the acquisition of the Lick Brook at Route 13 Gateway property, ID 10855.
We're going to have to pull that one also since the negative declaration is
okay.
Pulled.
So we're going to pull M and N. And we are going to do a roll call. Oh, sorry. Can I have a motion to move the consent agenda? moved by Rich, seconded by Amanda. Okay.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Has Henry Granison arrived yet? don't think so. Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Korman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
With 13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you very much. Now let's go back to our agenda, and I do not see any municipal officials here today. George McGonigal sends his regrets. There is a card for him. If everyone could sign that card, please. And is there anyone else that is here for municipal public comment?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
The two or the three resolutions that were pulled, you want to wait until the regular committee discussions for those? Because I've got at least one person waiting.
You know what, Mike? Let's go ahead and do those now. That way they can, they don't have to stay for a meeting if they don't want to.
I think that would be polite.
Okay. Greg?
Yeah, I just wanted to make an announcement real quick that I need to step away at about 5:58 for a personal Zoom matter that I need to address, and then we'll be back in 30, 40 minutes. So just wanted everybody to know why I was stepping out of the room.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Okay. Mike is the Chair of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Mike, would you like to roll out some of these resolutions?
Well, I'll move out the one that was pulled on my committee. That's Resolution C, establishing an air carrier incentive program, Ithaca-Tompkins International Airport, and that's ID 10873, and I do move that.
Seconded by Greg Muzzy.
Veronica, you pulled that, right?
No, I pulled it. Mike.
Both of them.
We both
sorry,
did.
Deborah. Excuse me.
Sorry.
I see that we have Roxanne here, our airport director, so I'm go ahead with your questions, and let's see if we can respond.
Go ahead, Deb.
Yeah, I would just like to offer an amendment. On line 31, or actually line 32, where it says the airport director is hereby authorized and directed to implement an air carrier incentive program, I would just like to change that to the airport director is hereby authorized and directed to negotiate an air carrier incentive program.
I'm seeing a nod from Roxanne, so that would be friendly to me.
Is that friendly?
That works. That works for me. Because I had put in there, nothing's going to happen without the approval from the ledge. So that was, you know, kind of at the end there. I was just, you know, putting this together, trying to get it out there so that we could, you know, we're going to negotiate. This is just allowing us to talk to airlines. The FAA will approve it. And then definitely I will bring everything back to F&I and full ledge. And
I just thought it would be clearer that way, Roxanne, because we don't have any details of this program yet. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I can also send the program to anybody that wishes to read more on it. There is a link through the FAA website, and I would be happy to share that for some fun-filled reading for you all. That's how I spend my weekends, you know.
Why don't you go ahead and send that to everybody after the meeting at some point?
Sure, I can do that. Absolutely.
Okay, I have Amanda and then Veronica.
Well, just can you repeat the amendment, please?
It would state that the airport director is hereby authorized and directed to negotiate an air carrier incentive program.
And that was friendly to Mike and Greg, the mover and the seconder. Veronica?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for that amendment, because I was also going to ask for some clarification. But I wonder, this seems like which airlines we have at the airport is a big topic of public interest. I wonder if Roxanne or Mike, you could give a one-minute description of what this even is.
I'm going to let Roxanne talk about that, but this is a program that can be is within FAA guidelines, Federal Aviation Administration.
Absolutely. I can give a little brief information. So currently, whatever service they're providing, we can't offer them an incentive. We can't offer them reduced rates. It has to be fair and negotiable, and this program spells it out. But say there's a new airline. I mean, we're, you know, actively seeking even a low-cost carrier. We can work with them and try to get them to come in here. It wouldn't, you know, whether it be waiving fees for a certain period of time, to offer them an incentive to come in here to begin service. If one of our current legacy carriers offers new service, say they pick a new destination, we could also then negotiate with them and give them a reduced rate because they're increasing the service to Ithaca at a different location. So that's just something that the FAA mandates that we follow, that it has to be fair and equitable to our current airlines as well as possible new airlines.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Deb Dawson.
So I just want to clarify, this is something distinct and separate from the revenue guarantees, for example, that some of the airlines would like to see.
Correct. So it's very difficult, and I don't believe we can offer a revenue guarantee, but communities can. So if we can get community support, whether it be local institutions, they can offer a revenue guarantee or a seat guarantee that will state, you know, we guarantee you're going to make $500,000 by beginning a flight to Ithaca. We've actually done this twice in the past many years ago. A revenue guarantee has never had to have been paid in the past. This is something, and I'm not sure if this has always been an FAA requirement. It was brought to my attention. I knew we needed to get this, you know, on the books so that we're ready, we're prepared. And this is just a one-time deal. We just, you know, it's out there. We're able to work with our airlines to build relationships and hopefully get service back to Ithaca.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions or comments for Roxanne or Mike? I see none. Let's do a roll call.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler? No longer with us. Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks, Roxanne.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, let's go ahead and move to the two pulled resolutions from Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Chair Ann Corman.
Use any lane to turn slightly right to stay on Westchester Avenue.
Okay.
Keep right to stay on Westchester.
Thank you.
All righty. Someone's trying to help me navigate through these here. So resolution M, we'll start with, it's making a negative determination on environmental significance in relation to the next resolution, N, of 2022, appropriating funds for the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the acquisition of the Lick Brook at Route 13 Gateway property ID 10854. And I so move.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Veronica Piller. Anne, would you like to talk to this resolution?
There's some information, quite a bit in our packet here, but it connects some other properties for the trail system, and it creates a place where you're going to be able to park. And for a lot of people, it might be easier access to get on some of the trails that we have locally. And so I don't know if Randy wanted these pulled, if you wanted to say something now. Or
Yes, please. Thank you. I just wanted to talk about this one because the public doesn't know much about these things when they happen. And I didn't, of course, before I got on the committee. But it did pass the committee unanimously, so that's not my issue. We did ask the Finger Lakes Land Trust. They gave a presentation here. Which was very good. I'm not opposed to protecting the land, and they're getting good deals on the land, but it will take them off the tax rolls as well. So that was one concern. But one of the things we asked the gentleman, I've forgotten his name now.
Andy Zepp.
Andy Zepp. was how the property could be used and how the trail systems are accessible and how do you find that information. And one of the things he told us was that they have a website. It's called gofingerlakes.org, which I visited, and it was very helpful, but I felt it was incomplete. So that was my comment. I wanted to bring it up that it could be, frankly, better and show more of the trails. I believe that since these properties are protected and not on the tax rolls, they should be utilized a lot more by people, and especially youth. And I think hiking is a good activity. And so that was just my comment. So.
Thank you, Randy. Any other questions or comments? Veronica Piller?
As long as we're on this, I'll just briefly say, assuming I'm understanding the map correctly, I've already hiked on this property. It's, I'm sure you heard, it's like already being used for trail access and parking, albeit maybe informally. I don't actually know who owns it right now. I hope that's not terrible. But it would be, I guess, at best a bummer if it stopped being available for that kind of use. And so I'm glad to see that this is getting more protection.
Great. Thank you, Veronica.
If I could just add one more thing.
Sure.
That there will be, I don't know if it's not exactly a kiosk, but there will be something there. I mean, granted, you know, as Randy's saying, you know, more information is desired, but there will be some information there that you can, like, physically pick up on the trail system.
Yeah, I guess, thank you for that, and I wasn't speaking specifically about those individual parcels, but as I looked over the website, there are many, many, many trails in Tompkins County, which are a great asset, and I just think it's a good tool, but I think that maybe a consolidation of tools, because there are other websites that have other trails on it, and so it'd be nice to have one spot where people can figure these things out. And in speaking to the school district in my area, they don't take kids there. They don't really know they're there. They should, but they don't. So I think more of an outreach program that is, you know, at their fingertips may be helpful. So.
Thanks, Randy. Any other questions or comments? Rich John?
At the risk of redundancy, having been out there, this really is a beautiful natural area. This is really good news that it's going to be protected. I would say if you go hiking there, you should really be careful. This is a rugged, steep gorge at Lichtbrook, and just exercise caution. But go see it. It really is something. Thanks.
And was that Rich John offering to be a guide?
We could... Yes, I'll be here all week. Yeah.
Great. Thank you all. Let's vote on this.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler? Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, and Anne, would you like to bring forth the second resolution that was pulled?
Sure, thank you. This is resolution N, and this is the actual appropriating the funds from the Tompkins County Natural Resource, Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the acquisition of the Lichtbrook at Route 13 Gateway property, ID 10855, and I move.
If I can have a seconder, seconded by Veronica Piller. And Annie already explained what this resolution is for. Are there any questions or comments? I see none. Let's vote.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
Great. Thank you all for allowing us to bring those resolutions forward so that our staff can head home and be with their families. Next, let's move to legislative privilege of the floor. Amanda Champion and then Deb.
Thank you. I have a lot of emotions today, but I'm going to share some facts. Across the history of human time, women have used abortion to maintain their personal choice of if and when to become a mother. Midwives, herbalists, and elder women knew the practices and procedures to safely end pregnancy and were called upon to support women in their decisions. It was not until the mid-1800s that governments began outlawing women's right to have abortions in the United States. White male doctors formed the American Medical Association in 1847 and decided that they should be the arbiters of abortion practice. Women, particularly black women, who worked as midwives, threatened the white male power structure and were attacked and discredited accordingly. Black healers and midwives in particular were painted as unprofessional at best and barbaric at worst. By the 1880s, all states had restrictions on abortion and the practice became stigmatized. In 1970, New York was the first U.S. state to legalize abortion. In 1973, the Supreme Court considered the Roe v. Wade case. It decided that the Constitution protects a person's right to privacy and thus to terminate their pregnancy. The government has no right to limit abortion practices. Regardless of legality, women have abortions. Women who cannot find safe medical care often turn to dangerous home remedies, which I won't go into. Many of these home remedies involve violent self-harm, and many, if not most, of these actions result in serious medical emergencies. In 2017, approximately 22,000 women and girls died from unsafe abortions. And while historically, and in modern times, white, wealthy women could sometimes quietly find a willing doctor or travel to another state for a safe abortion, this option did not, and generally does not, exist for black, indigenous, or poor women. Unsafe abortions and death occur more often in places that do not have safe, legal abortion options. Also in 2017, there were approximately 1,081 violent acts against abortion providers in the U.S. by people claiming to be pro-life. Many states have and are now enacting laws that deny access to abortion, even in the case of rape or incest. So, a 12-year-old child could be raped by her father, become pregnant, and be forced to carry that fetus for 9 months, then raise that baby with no resources, support, or health care. Some of these same lawmakers also say that it's too uncomfortable, it's too restrictive, and completely unconstitutional to force a child to wear a mask over their face and nose during the pandemic while at school for 6 hours. Today, approximately 1 in 4 women will have an abortion at some point during her childbearing years. I have had an abortion. Many of the women you know have had an abortion. If you don't believe in abortion, by all means, do not have one. But it is not an uncommon medical procedure. Whether and when to become pregnant and if to abort that pregnancy always was and always will be a decision that should be made by the woman facing this issue. It is a right of privacy, it is health care, and it is a personal choice. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Deb Dawson.
Yeah. It's a tough act to follow. Thank you, Amanda. I don't know what to say to people who espouse a right to life out of their performative religiosity and clearly care more about the life, quote unquote, of a bundle of cells than they do about the lives of women who are forced to have back alley abortions or resort to other dangerous means to try to terminate an unwanted pregnancy that would produce a child they cannot see a future to support. Be that as it may. Thanks for your observations, Amanda. I also want to thank the Finger Lakes Land Trust for maintaining a website that, however imperfect, provides residents and visitors to our beautiful Finger Lakes area with plenty of guidance for beautiful places to hike. But those are not why I raised my hand. So I want to take y'all back to 2017 when five of us were elected, and one of us managed to sneak in under the gun to replace Peter Stein and take her position a couple of months early, for which, amazingly enough, she gets credit for a whole extra year of service. And so I want to assist Kathy Covert in presenting our chairwoman, Shauna Black, with her five-year accolade for her great service to Tompkins County.
I made it.
Thanks, Deb. I couldn't have done it without you.
No, you couldn't have done it at all.
Oh, great. Thank you. Veronica, and then Annie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was a large emotional swing, and I'm a little off kilter, so I apologize for whatever's going to come out of my mouth. Thank you, Amanda, for sharing that history and sharing those facts and your experience. This isn't why I raised my hand either, but I just want to say that it is not a radical thing for people want to be in charge of decisions about their own bodies. It is not. And that I am proud to sit at this table with fierce women who will fight for that truth. I guess I'll also say to the public, as scary as today's news was, there no laws have actually changed, and we are lucky in New York to have stronger reproductive health protections than other places in the country. Anyway, but I raised my hand because May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I think I'm really happy to see just generally the destigmatization of mental health challenges and mental health treatment progress like ever more rapidly these years, these decades, I don't know. But I think it's not gone, so it's worth saying mental health is a thing. Mental health challenges are something that many folks share and that intersect with so many other concerns like physical health, like you know, material resources, like interactions with the various government systems that we run. I have been dealing with various nebulous mental health conditions for as long as I can remember, and I would not be here right now. I would be alive, but I would not be here in this seat if I didn't have both formal mental health treatment and an informal support system that understands that it's okay to talk about these things, and it's okay to understand that everyone's brains work differently, and we support each other and we get on nonetheless. So three more things to say. One to the county insiders, one to the public, and one to everybody. For us, I reflected at this at a committee meeting recently, but I've been hearing, especially the Public Safety Committee, from a lot of folks in charge of departments that aren't our Department of Mental Health, that they've been seeing increasingly many folks with evident mental health challenges and issues showing up in places like the jail, probation, the Office of Human Rights, probably others I'm forgetting. And I think this is really a call to like look harder. I know this is not a quick thing, but to at least keep in our minds what sort of mental health supports and systems we have in the county, like in and out of government. And also
since a lot of like front-facing folks are going to be dealing with mental health challenges, whether that's what they're actually trained for or not, what can we do about that? Are people ready, you know, not to suddenly turn into a therapist overnight, because that's like unfeasible and probably unethical, but how to receive people at the door with knowledge that, again, everyone's brains work differently. Lots of folks are traumatized from various things that you're not going to know. But can we still receive them, see them as people, see them like, you know, think about the needs of the person in front of you, even if it's hard and inconvenient. And I'm not saying we don't do this. I'm not like, I'm just saying this is a very hard thing to do. And it bears reminding, you know, I mess it up all the time. Second, just for everybody, it's not shameful to be struggling with mental health issues, with, you know, with depression, with anxiety, with, could be anything, schizophrenia, bipolar. I'm not going to roll out the DSM-5 here. But the point is that whatever you might be struggling with, you deserve support and you deserve treatment. And while it may be hard to access, there are many, many, many kinds of supports and treatments. So just because one thing didn't work for you doesn't mean that you should throw in the towel overall. Keep trying, keep asking for what you need. Our mental health department is one of many places you can come to talk to someone. If you don't even know where to begin to navigate, 211 is a place you can call. They won't provide your mental health care, but they can help you figure out where to go next. And also, preventative mental health care is a thing. You don't need to be like in a crisis to go get some sort of mental health support, the same way that you go to a doctor for a checkup, even if you're feeling healthy, or at least, you know, I hope you do. We can have a separate conversation about health insurance. Last thing, sorry, I'm almost done. There are a bunch of events coming up this month for Mental Health Awareness Month that I just like to advertise to everyone. The Mental Health Association in Tompkins County is having a, I forgot what it's called, but like a little mental health awareness gathering. Someone correct me if you know what I'm talking about. This Saturday, May 7th from 11 to 3 in Bernie Milton Pavilion, there will be events, info, yoga, food, and you can swing after that right on over to the Press Bay Alley parking lot just a couple blocks away for the Mama's Comfort Camp Caregivers Day that Yael Sarr talked about. Same day, this Saturday. That's from 1 to 9:30 p.m. Also, it's not mental health related. And then Story House Ithaca is hosting a whole series of events, presentations related to mental health this month. One of them is a screening of a film called Bedlam about inpatient psychiatric treatment of folks with like really severe mental illnesses and also how this interacts with other systems. That screening is on Sunday, May 15th at 4 p.m. at Cinemopolis. I'm hoping to go, and there will be like discussion with the director afterwards, I think. Plus, the Civic Ensemble, this is the last one, although there are other events, you should go to just storyhouseithaca.org to look this up. The Civic Ensemble and Reentry Theater Program, which, you know, puts on plays, like, generally, I think, like, written, directed, and performed by folks with involvement, past involvement in the criminal legal system. They're putting on a play, Delia Divided, about where the main character is navigating her mental health issues and how that intersects with her, again, interactions with the criminal legal system. And I was specifically requested to advertise this and invite people, so I am doing so for all of you in here and watching. That's running at the Hangar Theater from May 6th to May 15th. So with all those many options, I hope you take advantage of some way to jump into understanding and or treating others or yours mental health this month. Thanks.
Thank you, Veronica. Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank my colleagues for all the topics that they've talked about tonight, especially Amanda Champion. I wasn't going to speak, but when she mentioned, I think, a 12-year-old, you know, imagine a 12-year-old who was raped or sexually abused, I want to just tell you a quick story about a 12-year-old young girl who was sexually abused by her stepfather. Luckily, she didn't have to worry about getting an abortion. She didn't become pregnant, but that was a fear. And this ties into mental health issues also, so I wanted to bring up the story. When she was 19 years old and she learned about one of her younger sisters had also been sexually abused by her stepfather, she tried to commit suicide. Luckily, with assistance from mental health professionals, she was able to get a lot of help and lead a productive life. She later in life learned that, unfortunately, all four of her sisters had been sexually abused by her stepfather. Her sisters, Michelle, Dawn, Sandy, and Brenda, had all been sexually abused. And they all were able to get help for various mental health and addiction issues and are leading fairly productive lives, although they struggle at many times. It's not easy to be a survivor. And I just wanted to also just say that that 12-year-old was me, and those are my sisters. Thank you.
Thank you, Eddie. Mike Lane?
Kind of a somber evening tonight, isn't it? I have some somber things to say, and then I have some good news. Leaving my neighborhood, I was pleased this afternoon to see some houses displaying the Ukrainian flag, including mine. And it's a small thing that we can do to show our solidarity with the people of Ukraine who are suffering greatly by the unprovoked attack by the Russian government. I think a majority of people in this country support our helping to supply the war effort in Ukraine, the Lend-Lease, which hasn't been used since World War II, the ability to get our people over there. Our Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, was there along with our Secretary of State and our Secretary of Defense just previous to that to show our support. We know we're stuck. We'd love to put NATO forces in there and clean the clock of those people who are the aggressors. But the nuclear option, the nuclear deterrent, is very real, and we understand that. One of the worst things that I've heard recently was the trying to, in my view, belittle President Zelensky, who happens to be of Jewish origin, by trying to say, well, Hitler, I think Putin or Putin's people said, well, Hitler was may have been had Jewish blood in him. The Israelis were naturally upset and disgusted by those kinds of comments, which belittle the Holocaust. I suggest that if President Putin really wants to see a Nazi, he ought to walk over to his mirror in the morning and take a good hard look, because he's following Adolf Hitler's playbook in the Sudetenland and everywhere else. I wish there was more that we could do, but I understand it. It eats away at me as an American. Flying a flag is very little that we can do, but if folks can contribute to helping the folks that are being the refugees and the other people who are trying to flee from their own country because of the death and destruction, I hope they do that. So enough of that somberism. I have some good news tonight, and I'd like to say that our Tompkins Cortland Community College has a new president, and her name is Amy Kremenick, and she was appointed by the Tompkins County Board of Trustees, and that appointment was approved today by the State University of New York Board of Trustees, which is part of the requirement of having a new president. She's local from central New York. She served as vice president of enrollment, development, and communications at Onondaga Community College in Syracuse. And the previous 4 years before that, she was vice president of human resources and external relations at Onondaga Community College for part of her 20 years of experience in higher education. She earned a Bachelor of Science from the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University, a Master of Public Administration from the Maxwell School of Public Affairs and Citizenship at Syracuse University, and a doctorate in community college policy and administration from the University of Maryland Global Campus. We look forward to having Dr. Kremenick come and visit us and get introduced to her. And I know she's eager. She starts June 1 at the college. Provost and acting president Paul Reifenheiser will be staying on as vice president and provost of the college. So, thank you.
Randy Brown. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. I want to thank Veronica for speaking up about mental health issues. I'd like to see us really tackle some of those issues and hit them head on, and I'll walk with you on that. I think that when I'm hearing data from the committees I'm on and the information of neglect, abuse, mental health, I think it's something we should take on. We can't expect our federal government to step in for those things. They provide funding, and I guess it's our job to figure it out. So I'd like to see us take on those issues pretty hard. And I think there's a way, and I think there's a lot of organizations in Tompkins County that are already taking it on, and I applaud them. But I think we should empower them more and try to understand more of what we could help them to do so they can accomplish things. And lastly, I was in front of a grocery store today, and there was a gentleman there who was obviously homeless, and he had his grocery cart full of stuff, and he was kind of yelling and talking to himself. And I watched an individual walk up to him and start to talk to him. And I don't know who it was, but they were dressed up. I don't know if it was a mental health professional from Tompkins County or not. But I also noticed that they calmed him down. But I noticed he had a cell phone. It's my understanding that a lot of homeless people have cell phones somehow, which is fine. It's good. And I think maybe it's an opportunity of way to provide services efficiently if they have the way for telehealth issues, because then quite often people just need somebody to talk to. So that's my thought on that. So.
Thanks, Randy. Amanda?
I wanted to say something happy. On Saturday, two very good things are happening. The Tompkins County Friends of the Library book sale is starting for the first weekend. It goes Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for 3 weekends. So the first day, I think books are like $4.50, and then it goes down to like 10 cents a bag by the end. So go buy some books to support the library. Also on Saturday, it says 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. I thought it was longer than that, but is the Tompkins County Public Library Foundation Readathon, where
volunteers are reading from books, from stories, poetry, nonfiction, giving speeches, whatnot. You can go, bring your kids, listen to some people reading, and give a donation, and of course that supports the library as well. So it's a good book lovers weekend. So thanks.
Thanks, Amanda. Anyone else for legislator privilege of the floor? Okay, I see no other hands. I am, going to move to the chair's report. And I want to start off by thanking Annie, Amanda, and Veronica. The words that you spoke tonight were very brave, and I thank you for sharing your stories. I feel like I really cannot have a chair's report without addressing what is happening in our nation. Last evening, as I drove home from my daughter's hockey practice in Skinny Atlas, we listened to the radio and heard the news about the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe versus Wade. When talking to my 13-year-old daughter about this sensitive topic, I tried to stay as neutral as possible because I always want her to come to her own conclusions and think things through. The conversation took many turns, and one of the conclusions she actually came to was, I don't think it's fair that someone that has resources and money can get an abortion, but someone who has no money can't make the same decision. She's right. This is not only an issue of women's right to choose, but also a socioeconomic issue. Both rich and poor women have unwanted pregnancies. But unfortunately, regardless of these rollbacks, people with more means can still terminate their pregnancy, while those who do not are often put in unsafe and deadly circumstances. While I recognize that this decision is not final, I can't imagine not having access to safe health care if I needed to have an abortion. Allow me to be very clear. The debate about choice has been going on for decades. The one person that should have the most say over their own body should always be the woman, not the male politicians or judges. Keeping health care legal for women keeps all women safe. In 2019, New York State passed the Reproductive Health Act, which treats abortion like health care and not a criminal act. Although Roe versus Wade has stood for 50 years, states have begun rolling back access to care and threatening to criminalize those who seek an abortion. These efforts will worsen and spread if the decision is rendered, harming women and further driving negative health care outcomes for poor women. Our congressional and state leaders across the country must step up and codify laws that protect women from disastrous and harmful outcomes. I will continue to encourage our community to become involved. If you can, donate to nonprofits that support women's rights. Write your elected officials and let them know your opinion. In other news, I would like to thank Michael Stitely and his staff for letting me join them a few weeks ago. They gave me a tour of the dispatch, and then I hung out for around 2 hours and listened to the calls that were coming in from 4 to 6. It was very eye-opening as a legislator to see the calls that they were receiving. The majority of them were mental health calls. In that two-hour period, there were two calls for people that were suicidal, and that was just in the two-hour period that I was there, two different people. And so it really begs to question what we can do as a county to increase our services, increase the process, make the process better, and be able to help the people that really need it the most. And I thank you for allowing me to have that tour and to spend time with me. I also would like to address the reimagining public safety efforts and where we are today as a county and as a collaborative with the City of Ithaca. Tompkins County passed a meaningful set of plans following a mandate, not just from the previous governor, but from having watched so many examples of injustice across the United States, including the murder of George Floyd. This also included listening to the voices of the most vulnerable in our community who have been adversely impacted. I continue to thank the many that volunteered and shared their painful and traumatic experiences with us.
I believe that we've seen from the collaborative so far is a good faith effort to improve policing and outcomes for community members, to increase accountability, and ultimately to respect the input from those who have experienced policing and the criminal justice system differently from the majority of our white population. We're just scratching the surface on the dozen-plus collaborative plans and several county-specific plans. We are committed to being thorough, inclusive, and transparent on how those plans are developed and implemented. We will have an advisory board for the Community Justice Center that will aid in these efforts. I want to thank our county departments for their leadership on the plans currently being implemented. Sheriff Osborne and Under Sheriff Olin, as I meet with them on a regular basis, typically over some good Mexican food. I appreciate his dedication and commitment to this process. He has been hard at work developing a pilot program to offer unarmed responses to certain calls, and our mental health department has been a leader in the discussions on studying alternative responses and planning for better and more immediate delivery of human services. Our Department of Emergency Response has been an excellent and trustworthy partner on each plan as they've been called to provide advice and expertise. There is great and important work being done, work that takes time. I'm grateful for the monthly updates that we get from the CJC, and I invite legislators to listen and ask questions so that we all stay on the same page moving forward. There have been questions swirling around regarding the city's process and the report recommending a Department of Community Safety. I understand that there is a process in place, such as going through the county's ethics advisory board to review the situation, but at this time, I do not think it is wise to speculate, make public accusations, or wade into the debate. Our county attorney, Bill Troy, who advises us in the Ethics Advisory Board, is assessing jurisdiction and the nature of any questions or complaints brought forth. What I will say is that we are committed to this process. Our county will stay the course, and we have a firm commitment to our community to do better. We devote significant resources to the criminal justice and public safety, and I anticipate that the legislature will continue to be asked for resources as these plans are implemented. I want to caution us about denying support to the wider work of reimagining because we are uncertain of the outcomes of one plan. The public is listening, and our actions to improve public safety, especially for marginalized communities, is more critical now than ever before. I want to encourage all of us to continue to remember and reinforce why we are here. There is still important work to be done, and I look forward to continuing that work. Thank you. My last announcement, sorry this is so long tonight. This week is Public Service Recognition Week, and in that spirit, I want to recognize the over 700 public servants who work at Tompkins County and the thousands of others in Tompkins County who work at our local municipalities, school districts, and state and federal offices. Whether it is ensuring that our roads are safe and clear, educating our children, or the hundreds of other critical local services, public servants are the livelihood of our communities. A specific example of public service at its finest is a life-saving event that occurred at our airport over the weekend. Members of our airport team, Sheriff's Department, Emergency Response Department, and volunteer EMS came together to deliver life-saving care for an individual who had stopped breathing. From the immediate response of our people on the scene to the direction given by one of our dispatchers, public servants are responsible for saving someone's life. Thank you to every one of our public servants for the work that you do in Tompkins County. I continue to be proud of the outcomes that we deliver to our community. If we could give everyone a hand, please. Okay. With all that said, it is now time for our special presentation, and I would like to introduce Jeff Dunn and Michael Stitely here from our Department of Emergency Response.
Am I okay here?
You're great.
Mike's just here to lend me moral support and answer any questions that you may have. Thank you, Madam Chair, and good evening, everyone. I do want to digress before we start on the presentation and let you know that it really is gratifying to be doing this work. And this, we did not plan this, Chair and I didn't plan this, but it's a perfect segue to what she was just saying. I'm completing my 10th year of service to Tompkins County, and we all know that the role of the public servant has been quite magnified during the pandemic. And I can tell you there's no better feeling than the satisfaction that you are making a difference in your community. And I'm thankful for the support that this body has consistently shown its workforce. And I might add that with the incident at the airport terminal, it was a testament to the public access defibrillator program that Lee Shurtleff helped put into place several years ago. And that automatic external defibrillator was being used and was right there for this person who was in distress. So thank you again. So after speaking to the Public Safety Committee at its most recent meeting, Rich John asked me if I would do the same for the full legislature. So I must be a glutton for punishment because I said yes. So here I am, and I'll try to be a brief. Since last March, since this past March, we have been signing up folks under a new mass notification system, Tompkins County Siren, replacing Swift 911, which had been in place since 2017. Now, Rave Mobile Alert, the company that acquired Swift Reach, is in the process of transitioning the Swift customers to the Rave Alert product. So rather than being told we had to move, we figured now was the time to just make that transition. Rave is the platform that is used by Cornell University, Ithaca College, Cayuga Medical Center, and just as we have done with Tompkins Siren, this shift allows for the user to custom brand the system. So, for example, Cornell uses Cornell Alert. Some other cities, Seattle uses Alert Seattle as its name. Chicago is Notify Chicago. And Louisville, Kentucky is Lens Alert. And Lens is an acronym for Louisville Emergency Notification System. So it's all the Rave platform, but they've been customized to their specific community with their name. So Siren here is an acronym that stands for Safety and Incident Real-Time Emergency Notifications. And this rebranding is the brainchild of our communications director, Dominic Recchio. And this name and logo incorporates many of the references, while staying within the Tompkins County brand guidelines that Dominic has established. So Siren's an acronym. The rounded Tompkins County represents the county seal. The wings reference the county seal and eagle. And the sirens of Greek mythology from Odysseus's return to Ithaca. Now, I don't know if that's a big deal for a lot of folks outside of Ithaca, but it is for us, right? The colors mimic the colors of the Department of Emergency Response patch and logo, and the red light, of course, is indicative of something that's urgent or important information. So up until now, this has been a soft launch. We've had news releases, we've done social media posts, we've done a few group presentations, but this week every household in the county is receiving this mailer, two-sided mailer. Can't miss it when it comes in your mailbox.
Got it today.
And there are billboards on the outside of TCAT buses now, and posters, pamphlets, and these little business cards have all been distributed to our town and village offices, the city of Ithaca. I visited TC3 this week, and we're hitting a lot of the heavy distribution areas. So we're really going to see now the push to get folks to sign up. And this sign-up process is very easy. This is the Siren landing page that is on the Tompkins County website. There are two places to go that you can sign up. The red box where it says click the sign-up now, and then halfway down there says sign up to receive emergency notifications here. You could also use your phone and text Siren to 67283. And either way, it's going to take you then to the sign-up page, which is this, okay, asking for your basic information, primarily your name, your email address. You'll need to create a user ID, which is usually your email address. It'll ask you for a phone number and then what kind of phone you have. And then once you're done with that, it'll send you a code to verify your account. And then you go to this page, which is where you can choose to select the alerts that you want to receive. You need to select them on the left-hand side of the page, and then the right-hand side is the form in which you want to receive them, whether you want to receive text, voice, or email. Everyone who signs up automatically receives countywide emergency alerts, which we don't issue very often. But then you have to then select more specific ones. So, Ann, you would probably select the village of Trumansburg, County of Ulysses alerts.
Enfield, town of Ithaca.
Enfield, yeah. Okay. Anybody who travels to and from Ithaca every day probably will sign up for a lot of the Ithaca alerts. I can tell you that the city of Ithaca has used this for its most recent round of street cleaning notifications. We've had the town of Ithaca use them for some road closings. We've had some weather alerts that have been posted on there. So folks are using it. They're not using it indiscriminately so that you're not going to become desensitized to getting these alerts. Is there one other page? No. So this is another form of some of the publicity we're doing. This is very much like what you'll see on the buses, and we've created some bumper stickers with this. So a couple of points to make. While it is true, and we did specify in some of our early literature, that the Swift 911 information had been carried over to Siren, or migrated is the term they use, the user must still go in and create a profile and an account within Siren. Now, if you haven't, you would still receive alerts and notifications, but only if that information that you had in Swift was valid. And what we're finding is a lot of it is out of date. People have changed their phone numbers. They no longer have that email address, whatever the case may be. The Swift lists, if you will sunset at the end of the year and will no longer be used. So that will then, give us, basically between now and the end of the year to encourage folks to please sign up using the Swift portal on our website or by texting Siren to the phone number. And I also want to make clear that emergency alerts in particular are sent for the most part from our 911 dispatch center when we receive a request to do so from an incident commander or a responding law enforcement agency or fire company. So the alerts just don't, create themselves. They've got to be initiated by someone on scene, if it's a road closing or a fire disruption or something of that nature. And they would then be requested to send that information out. And I know Dominic's excited about this. We have if we can go back a couple, Dominic, just to the website. Right there on the left-hand side, you'll notice under the menu, there's an archive of past notifications. I did not include that in this the PowerPoint, but that is where all of the alerts that have been issued will stay. And you can view those. So that's a very quick overview. I appreciate the time, and please encourage your constituents and those who are watching tonight to sign up.
Thank you, Jeff, for the presentation. Mike Lane.
Jeff, I have a home phone, I have a mobile phone, yep. And I have a house or a business phone. I have a couple of numbers. I have a couple of email accounts. Yep. Do I have to go in for each one, or how do we do that?
No. There is something that did not exist with Swift that exists with the enhancements with Rave, is that there's a deduplication procedure. So if you have multiple phone numbers or multiple email accounts, it will only send one message out to one of those. So you won't be getting several messages out of the same time.
What if you want them?
Pardon?
What if you want them? Like I might want one at my home and I want one at my business, for example.
Well, you can, you can do that. Well, I see what you're saying. So you would have to put in more than one number. And if you go, Dominic, can we go back to that?
It lets you do that then.
There is a spot where you can set up a alternate phone numbers. Preference one, preference two.
Okay.
Okay. And if you want to put them all in there, then you put them in there.
That makes sense.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Ann Corman and then Rich John.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks, Jeff, for being here and talking about I'm always trying to get this information out to my constituents. So for me, it's very helpful to have more detail on this. Two things. First is I really like these little cards. I'm just wondering if I could have like a dozen of them or something, because I would carry them around, because it looks like someone could just snap a picture with their phone, or I could
Absolutely.
Give one to someone to take home to sign up. So if you have some available. And then the second thing, I like that at first I was like, oh, I have to go back in and sign up again. But I was really glad that I did, because you have a lot more options than before.
Correct.
And so I really got to think about, okay, what I was getting notices before, do I still want those? Mm-hmm. And what would I like now? So I was glad to kind of refresh that.
And likely you wouldn't remember what you had chosen before.
Possibly not.
Right.
So maybe I'm doing it exactly the same. We really don't know for sure. But anyway, I was joking there. But so another thing there is the information. I don't know if that was there before, but the information for each district or for a lot of the districts and towns, and so you could sign up for just information, not emergency alerts. So I signed up for those, emergency things more around the county. But then for my district,
right.
I signed up for informational things that come from my municipalities that I represent. So I was glad to have that option.
Correct. Each municipality has an emergency alert choice and a community notification, community news, which is of the less urgent nature, but still information that municipality may want to get out, like a planned road closing or a construction notification, that kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
Yep.
Great. Thanks, Annie. Next is Rich John.
Thanks, Shauna. Jeff, I wanted you to know that I don't feel guilty at all making you do your presentation all over again. This is such important information, and I do appreciate you coming in, and Michael, to
Absolutely.
Talk about it again. But when we heard about it at Public Safety, it was like, this is something that really should be out there. This is certainly an improvement to our overall system. The fact that it's going to be on the same platform with the other major providers in the county makes just wholly good sense. So thank you. And I'd ask, perhaps we could do another marketing push in September when we get an influx of many more residents here in our county, new residents, that we try to add them all. But thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are a few nuances with the system. I'm still doing some deep dives into the back end. Dominic had asked me if I could give some updated numbers on where we are with people who've registered. It looks as if we've had about 10,000 new registrations since the end of March. Okay. But I haven't been able to break that out into, okay, how many have done email, how many have chosen voice alerts or text alerts. By comparison, when we were at the end of last year, SWIFT had about 53,000 names in it. So about half of the county population was in there. So if you look at the fact that just over a month we've got 10,000 on this new platform, that's pretty good to start without really doing a good advertising and promotion push. So I'll be anxious to see what the numbers look like in another month.
And if I could ask at an upcoming public safety, if we could get those numbers, some sort of report, that'd be really helpful. Thanks.
Only 9 of those 10,000 are Mike Lane.
At least.
At least. At least.
I signed up just for one.
Okay, Randy Brown and then Greg Muzzy.
Thank you. This is really good. It's cool that it's customizable for for what Thompson County is doing. And looking at the list, I noticed that it looked like Enfield or Newfield were on the choices to be picked for. Maybe I missed it. It didn't look like they were there. So, but it has to be initiated. And I sent an email to Mike from a resident in Enfield. I copied Ann and Rich as well. And it's new, right? It's a new system, so he's got a lot to learn. But I thought it was a real life experience. So in Enfield over the weekend, there was somebody who was trying to escape law enforcement, and they were trying to find him. And they did find him, but this particular individual had signed up for siren and didn't get an alert, even though he lived on that road. So, but your explanation that unless one of the law enforcement people say, "Hey, please notify people on siren," then that's not going to happen, right?
Correct.
Correct.
Right. So going back to Enfield and Newfield, are they on the system or? Or that wasn't a choice to click on if I sign up.
Oh, it's on there. Yes. That was probably a cadet.
Towards the bottom of the list.
Oh, there's a PowerPoint. Okay, scroll down.
Yes, sir.
I thought I went
everybody's
to the
on there.
Yeah, I should have gone to the website, so I apologize for that. But looking at that, maybe some understanding of maybe some education for the first responders as to when they should be authorizing these notifications should be discussed. I mean,
absolutely, I agree. In fact, I really appreciate the email exchange. I think that there's always opportunity, and I think that gives some food for thought. Jeff and I were talking about it today on just exactly doing that, revisiting this new platform with our public safety leaders so that they know that it's a tool and that we're emphasizing its use, and just a reminder on how the workflow should go if there's an event. So, again, thank you very much, because I think it really, and again, it highlighted something right after our current event, and I think there's a good opportunity for us to interface with our public safety partners.
It's all new.
Yeah.
It's also, you don't want to alarm people too much either, so
right.
I know there's a decision we made there. And the last thing is, do you know how much it costs to mail this out? I think it's a good idea. I'm just curious, what's it cost?
It costs us about $15,000 to do a mass mailing to every household in Tompkins County.
Something like this.
With that size, which is what the Postal Service recommends you do with some of the limitations. This is the third time we've done it. We did it twice with COVID information.
Thank you. It was just good to know. Thank you.
Any other questions for Michael or Jeff? Oh, sorry. There are a lot of people. Greg and Ann Corman.
Sorry. Thank you both for the presentation. I think this is great. I just one thing to Rich, to what Rich said, but one, I just want to really commend the branding, and I have a feeling Dominic was behind that. No offense if somebody else was, but this is just really approachable government, right? And I think that this is really fantastic, because it's something you can see in your mailbox. It's like, oh wow, this is something I should do, rather than like it's just another piece of bureaucratic information being passed along. So I think this is really smart. I think the more we can move in this direction, I know Dominic, you probably have a long list of things to do, but I just wanted to commend you and commend you all for making this multiple facets of the county organization and other folks bringing people to the table, because this is really good work. This is impressive. I think it's worth every penny, because if somebody sees this and may not see a social media post, but we get it in their mailbox, they get it in their hand, and I think it's really a great job. So thank you. Well done there. And I'm sure there was many people that worked on it, so please pass along our appreciation, or at least mine. The other question is with the freshmen or new students to Cornell, Ithaca College, TC3, to Rich's point, I know that those universities have their own systems that they use, and that's great. But I also think, these postcards or these things, if there's a way to get that in and get those folks plugged in when they get here, and hopefully we're coordinating with those institutions, because I think this is valuable information for those that, are here temporarily, in the community. So I appreciate that, and hopefully I'm sure you guys are working on something there.
our message, you know, in the emergency preparedness world is that, you know, you sign up for everything you can. So if you have, you know, Cornell alerts, you have, you know, the Tompkins County alerts, you have the New York alerts, you know, it doesn't hurt to be signed up for as many as you can get.
Great. Thank you, Greg. Next is Ann Corman.
Thanks. One more comment in regard to what Randy was saying. I know the search for the person was the sheriff's office was assisting the New York State Police.
Right.
And so maybe we're getting into the weeds here, but I think it's important. Can New York State Police use our service? Or?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank okay.
You. Absolutely.
But especially with the sheriff's, you know, department helping out, because that's one of the things we're going to get, and I got that right after. If for some reason, you know, I wondered that too, of why wasn't this on the alert system, and that's a question that we're going to get. If there was a certain reason that it was not, then it would be really helpful for us to have that information, you know, as we get updates, say, from the sheriff's department to, you know, at least to legislators or maybe the public, something that goes out to the public. Like, this was not put on the alert system because this person wasn't a danger, blah, 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 and there's a certain reason, because we're going to get that immediately. And we want to, it'd be nice if we had that information to give to our constituents and also understand the rationale, because there be times when there, I would assume you would use it, and sometimes not. So it would give us and also our emergency services, you know, have more trust in the community.
Great.
Great. Thanks, Annie. Any other questions or comments?
If I may.
Yeah.
If you don't mind. So
yeah,
I just want to thank Jeff and Dominic, and 100% correct. Dominic was the brains behind the branding, and we really appreciate it. And during the Public Safety Committee, I did recognize Dominic, and I just would like to do it again here this evening because, you know, they really worked as a team. But Dominic did a lot of heavy lifting, and I just really want everybody to know how much we appreciate it and how much we appreciate the work that Jeff did as well. So thank you both.
Thanks, Mike.
Great. Thank you all. Great product. Okay. Let's see here. Next, I am actually going to talk a little bit about a new committee that we are going to have, and it's going to be called the Recovery Advisory Committee. Reached out to our county attorney, Bill Troy. Lisa Holmes and I have collaborated as well, and essentially we have hired the consulting firm to come in and help us with our recovery fund. And the idea is that five legislators would come together and work directly with the consulting firm to get them up and running, to provide them with some ideas and some assistance in making the application, as well as deciding on some metrics and helping them get the process started. Ideally, this would be a committee that would only meet 3 to 6 times. And would guide them. Everything that goes through this committee would come to the full legislature for voting as well. So it's just a smaller committee of the whole. With that said, I would like to appoint Dan Klein as chair, Lee Shurtleff as vice chair, and then members will be Veronica and Corman and myself. Any questions or comments about this new committee? Right now, our goal is obviously to get this going as fast as we can and get the money out the door. And so we're going to be moving pretty quickly with this group of five. Okay.
Donna?
Yeah, go ahead, Deb.
Shauna, I think there's an important distinction to be made here. This is not a committee. This is a working group.
No, Deb, it actually is a committee. Yeah, we discussed it with Bill today.
it's all right for it to be a committee?
Yeah, that's the best way, because we, you know, ideally we really want to make sure it's as transparent as possible to the people applying, to our community, so that they understand the conversations, and we should not be having the conversations behind closed doors. So we will have staff there. It will be available on Zoom. We will have to have somewhat of an agenda in order for us to be as transparent as possible with this process.
Okay, thanks for letting me know.
Anytime. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you. Next up, we have reports by the county administrator.
Thanks, Madam Chair. A few items to report on this evening, including a brief update on the Reimagining Public Safety and the Community Justice Center. But my brief updates include county administration. We're still in the midst of our budget director search. We're not quite at the finish line with that, but we'll keep you posted. We're also in the process of conducting interviews with internal candidates for a deputy county administrator this week. And the interview panel includes department heads and legislators. Thank you to Annie and Amanda for your participation on that. And on the COVID front, Tompkins County is still in a CDC-defined high transmission area because of our number of positive cases and hospitalizations. We issued a mask advisory last week, encouraging the public to wear masks indoors while around others. We still have a supply of KN95 masks available through many locations, and people can call 211 or visit the health department's website to find more. We've also encouraged the public to have patience with local businesses and service providers, as our local workforce is continues to be impacted by COVID, and that includes our Tompkins County workforce and staff. So we're all taking our precautions and doing what's necessary for people to stay home and recover. And our public health director, Frank Krupa, is here if there are any COVID-related questions this evening. Before I move on to the Reimagining Public Safety update, do people have any questions for Frank on the COVID front?
Any questions for Frank or Lisa? Okay, I think we're good.
And thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Frank, for being here tonight. And then I just want to welcome Monalita Smiley, to give us a brief update on Reimagining Public Safety from the CJC.
Hi, thanks, Lisa. Good evening, everyone. Just a quick update on where we're at with the Reimagining process. So, like Madam Chair had spoken earlier, what we're charged with is we're here to address the disproportionate policing of communities of color and to foster a trust, fairness, and community engagement while being transparent in the whole process.
Mona, I'm sorry to interrupt. We can't hear you very well. You're going in and out.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Is that any better? Okay.
Yeah.
So I just had to rearrange that one mic there.
Okay.
Okay. So I was just saying that basically, you know, reiterating what you had said as to what our charge is with being transparent, building community engagement, and addressing the disproportionate policing for communities of color. That's being done through our local, you know.
Still can't hear. We can't hear you, Mona.
You still can't hear me. I'm sorry.
No. Do you want to try speaking louder, maybe?
Yeah.
Just your mic. She's got a mic on.
I'm, like, screaming, but, yeah, is that better?
That is better, yes.
Okay, so I'll just talk really, really loud.
That's great.
Where we're at right now with the CJC is we just completed the phone screening interviews for the data analysis position. We have a couple finalists that we will be going into virtual interviews in the near future, hopefully next week, and we have an expected start date of summer of 2022 for them. Plans that are in progress right now, this is, you know, an update from last month, is the City of Ithaca Department's redesign is County Council is discussing that plan. The community healing plan is one that's been in progress, and it's going really, really super well. We've had our third session. Our fourth one is this month. I've gotten a lot of feedback from public, whether it's through email or in person, just being out on the street. Lots of people that have attended the sessions are really impressed and encouraged and excited for more. In fact, one quote was, why do you only do it once a month? That's working really well. That will lead into the healing plan with law enforcement. The alternative response plan we're working on, identifying a local facilitator here. We've reached out to a couple different of the local universities, TC3, Cornell, and IC, to provide the research study aspect of it. And then a presentation has been presented to both city administration and the public safety committees for the process. So the Office of Wellness, we're still doing some research with other communities on what's working for them. Another big one is the pilot program, which you talked about a little bit, you know, touched on earlier with what Derek is doing. So the interviews have been completed. We're hoping the positions to start June 13th. There will be an announcement that's coming up. Dom has graciously blessed us with his talent. So it'll be an announcement on launching the plan for input. That'll also be on our Reimagining Public Safety website. And then shortly after, there will be some information on who was hired for the positions. So a little background on them. And then we're also going to be hosting a conversation with all the jurisdictions on May 11th to bring them up to speed with what's going on with that plan and how it's going to be implemented. You know, the development committee has completed their work. It's still pending legal review, so we're just waiting to hear back from the attorneys. And then report to the elected officials will come up as soon as we get that review back. That's it. Any questions for me?
Thank you very much, Mona Lita. Any questions? Ann Corman?
Thanks, Mona Lita, for your report. I'm glad to hear, you know, about the progress, and just put a shout out about the meeting with the municipalities. So thank you. Glad to hear that's going to be happening. And then just one question. You've mentioned before about how well the community healing groups are going. Approximately how many people, and are they, you know, where are they from? Are they like mostly Ithaca, or are they throughout the county, the people that are going to them and where they're held?
They are virtual at this point.
Okay.
But it's people that live throughout the county. And I would say we've had three sessions. I'd say probably the average is anywhere from 20 to 25 people.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Randy Brown.
Thank you. Thank you, Mona. This is an important issue, obviously. When we met with the Sheriff's Department, they gave us data for 20 and 21 for what the Sheriff's Department, how often they had to use force or show force, and the number of interactions they had. And it was interesting. And I was wondering if that information is being shared openly with everybody. Because that gives a clear picture, at least what the county's been dealing with. And do you have you looked at the data they have, Mona? And do you feel comfortable with the data?
I personally have not seen that data at this point.
The sheriff does publish that in the annual report.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay. One part of it, too, is that we are in the process of hiring a data analyst, and that will be their job, is to actually bring forth the data, past data as well as future data on how we're doing, so that we could see the metrics and make sure that we're actually doing the work that we're intending to. Any other questions for Mona Lita? Henry?
Yes. In terms of the healing sessions, have they only been for the community, or have you also done them for the police yet?
The really working on is for community of color and minoritized population. We are still reviewing bids and contracts to see who we will get for the law enforcement.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyone else? I see no hands. Thank you very much, Mona Lita.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Lisa, do you have anything else to report?
That's it for me. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next up is County Attorney Bill Troy.
The only thing of note I have to report is that the post-trial motions for the case that went against us were finalized on Friday, and the judge has promised a decision in 60 days. But obviously, when that comes in.
Any questions for Bill? Okay. Thank you, Bill. Next is Director of Finance, Rick Snyder.
Good evening, everybody. I have no report for you this evening.
Okay. Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome.
And we are moving on in our agenda. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Deborah, do you have a resolution you would like to add? Resolution Q.
I don't know that I do, because I thought there was a resolution that had to go through public safety as well as DCP.
No, Deborah, that resolution is just coming to the legislature. It's being fast-tracked because the bids expire May 17th, I believe, so we couldn't schedule a public safety meeting in time for it.
Okay, well, then I guess, is that DOC ID 10895? No.
It is 10911.
Shauna, I do not think that I have that. Well, wait a second.
It's the department vehicle for probation.
Right, we approved that today, but I had understood from
Madam Chair? If I could move DOC ID 10911, appropriation from contingent fund, purchase of department vehicle, Department of Probation and Community Justice.
Okay. Seconded by Greg Muzzy.
The motion's to add the resolution to the agenda.
Yes, it's just to add the resolution to our agenda. We will need 10 votes in order to add it. And is there a discussion to add this to our agenda? Just to let everyone know, too, there is a timeline for this, and this is why we are doing this so quickly, as not to go around process. So let's do a roll call.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, that is now added to our agenda. And let's go to the standing and special committees. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you. The Public Safety Committee met on April 21st, and we had a very good meeting. We had a guest join us, a woman who is a resident of the county, a neighbor, and she talked about how her son had inadvertently taken a drug last summer that was laced with fentanyl, and he died. And she really brought home to us how much of a problem this is in our community, that fentanyl is being used in combination with other drugs and not necessarily in an identified form. There are test strips you can use to quickly identify the presence of fentanyl. And she thought that we could probably do more to make those test strips available and to do more on notification to the general public when there's some drugs that are laced with fentanyl coming into our community. And I think she's right on both counts. And that's part of the reason I thought that the siren notification system presentation was so timely. By the way, when the Public Safety Committee, I believe that is going to be available on video. I don't think it's up yet. But I would urge every legislator to watch the piece of the meeting. It's near the front when this woman came and spoke with us. It was really, really powerful. I believe we may have an opportunity to do something with the notification system for all the public health departments and agencies when there's some report of some dangerous drugs coming through. And so we had that presentation. And as I said, it was really instructive and powerful, and I want to thank the woman for coming and talking to us. We also did have discussion about the situation with mental health services in our county, and I know this is coming at us from a lot of different directions, but our jail administrator talked about mental health issues with the inmates at the jail.
No.
Seem to be more extreme and common. I'm going to take my mask off just for a moment because I'm afraid I'm not being understood here. I recently attended the CJATI meeting, the Criminal Justice Alternatives to Incarceration Committee, that brings in lots of different county and local agencies involved in alternatives to incarceration. And mental health was the topic that really dominated our conversation. I am afraid that with our move through the pandemic, we haven't fully realized the mental health impacts that will be with us for a long time to come, and we probably need to do some real work to reevaluate how we're addressing that. One of the things, thank you, Dan Klein, for responding, we're talking about trying to do is to do a joint public safety and health and human services meeting, and that would be certainly one of the topics to discuss. I think perhaps that might be possible at our June meeting. But we probably do need to spend some real time thinking how we can do better in this area. Other than that, I did want to give the jail statistics. We're at 42 people in our jail and one board out. So we've stabilized that. Those numbers had bumped up a little bit last month, but they've come back down. And so I think that's good news. Other than that, we will be meeting the third Thursday in May. I don't have the date in front of me, but at 3 o'clock. And I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
Any questions for Rich John? Okay, I see none. Thanks, Rich. Next, Health and Human Services Committee, Dan Klein, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health and Human Services Committee has not met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting will be on Monday, May 16th at 3 o'clock, and we have two big presentations scheduled for this meeting. At the beginning of the meeting, we will have a presentation about a proposal to have a sanctioned homeless encampment on city property. The current proposal is that it would be 25, call them cabins, that would house up to two people each, so up to 50 people on this site. They would have heat and electricity. It would be a central bathhouse. And if this plan is to proceed, it's going to require a lot of buy-in from the county. So we all are going to need to hear about this and understand this proposal and have a chance to ask questions. This will be a first good opportunity to hear the proposal and weigh in on it, or to at least ask questions. And then at 4 o'clock on May 16th, we will have a presentation from Melissa Perry, of the director of the Child Development Council. And it's going to be focused on the ways that the county is involved with and may become involved with the child care system in Tompkins County. So some of those things include the building access to child care specialist position, which is a county-funded position, a large joint child care proposal that we have submitted to New York State with Erie County, and the multi-agency Regional Economic Development Council funding that has been received as partial funding for some very large child care infrastructure projects in the county that have not, as far as I understand, none of them have proceeded or are proceeding at this moment. So we'll get an update on those and some discussion about how that process might get moving again. So this should be a really interesting and really informative meeting. And if you only make one Health and Human Services Committee meeting in 2022, make it the May 16th.
Great. Thank you, Dan. We have Henry Grenison with his hand up.
Yes, Dan. You talked about the large county buy-in for the plan dealing with the homeless. Can you explain, can you give me some ideas or some suggestions of what the buy-ins would be?
Yeah, so understand that this isn't part of the plan yet. This is just my understanding of what the county's role could potentially be. So first of all, there's going to be a large cost to build this encampment, and I don't know anyone knows yet where that money might come from. The plan is that this encampment would be staffed 24/7, so somebody's going to have to pay for that staff person and more than one person, whole infrastructure. And then also, you know, most of the services that are provided to this population are county services, so we're going to have to be very involved and in agreement with this plan, otherwise it's not going to work because we're not going to be there to make sure these services are available and used by the residents.
Where do they plan on building the encampment?
I mean, it's basically behind Walmart is the preferred site. I guess there were three sites identified all in that general area, and that's the one that's preferred right now. Again, I just want to say none of this is even close to set in stone yet, so any of these factors could change, but that's my current understanding.
And do they have, well, I guess it's too soon to know whether they have buy-in from the homelessness.
Hey, Henry, why don't you attend the meeting? Okay.
And I don't know the answer to that question, Henry, so yeah, we'll find out together in 2 weeks.
Okay, Deb Dawson?
Yeah, thank you. Dan, unfortunately, I'm going to be out of town when that meeting occurs, so I didn't want you to think that my absence arose from disinterest. I will do my best to watch your video.
I mean, I won't think that about anybody. I just wanted to just let you know this would be a good one to attend if you can, but of course we're all busy.
Thank you, Dan. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, we met on Thursday, April 21st, and we started prior to the meeting with a tour of the properties on North Tioga Street, the 400 block, the dental building, and the big red house, 405. Thanks to Lisa Holmes and Arel Lamaro for arranging that and the staff that were there to help us go through those two buildings. Pointed out some of the structural deficiencies in those buildings. That will be very useful as the committee begins to focus on what happens to those buildings in the future. Nothing's going to happen to them without the approval or of the full legislature. I want everyone to be aware of that. The tour was for our committee, and we also had several other legislators who attended that, and we want to thank them for coming. At our meeting, most of what we did at our meeting was covered by resolutions that we've already dealt with this evening. We did have a presentation from the Department of Emergency Response about the progress on the backup center communication project, which is the joint project with Cornell University up on Pine Tree Road. And we understand that that should be ready for occupancy by the end of the year. And at some point, we're going to have tours of that set up by emergency response. Thanks to Mike Stetley and others are going to help us with that. And we want everyone to be invited to see that facility. The space itself, we learned, is going to be maintained by Cornell University, janitorial and other kinds of things. So we get to use it. We got to look at some of the configurations of the communications console units that will be in there, but it will be a good thing, and it'll be available in case of a loss at the main center, and we need to have backup capabilities up there. At the Highway Department, we reviewed the quarterly capital projects status report. Thanks to Jeff Smith for that. Pretty much that was it. Randy, anything else you'd like to put in?
Can't think of anything. That's good.
All right. So that's pretty much it. I'm glad to answer any questions.
Jarvis Brooks.
Oh. I hit the button by mistake. I don't have a question.
Okay. Any other questions for Mike?
Well, glad to hear from you anyway, Travis.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. And it's 7:31. Typically, we take a break right now, but we really do not have that much more left in our meeting, might be my guess. Should we just keep going forward? Okay. Let's see here. Government Operations Committee. Amanda Champion, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The HHS Committee sounds like a really great meeting, but Government Operations is meeting in 2 days. At noon on Thursday, and we're going to have some really great discussions, so you should all come. We are going to talk about a resolution and the idea of continuing to have hybrid and virtual meetings based on the state's options. We're going to look through some of that details and decide what we want to do about that. We're going to have a presentation from the public library, just some updates on what they're up to and how things are going. A report, foreclosure report from Department of Planning and Sustainability. We're also going to have a report and discussion about something that has come up recently about tax exemptions for volunteer firefighters and ambulance workers. It's not going to be a vote. We're not going to vote on this. It's just going to be information gathering, and people can ask questions. And let's see. And then we're also looking at another policy for the first time in a while, which is very exciting, our fiscal policy. So lots of good stuff there. Everyone's welcome. Noon on Thursday. Thanks.
Any questions or comments for Amanda? Okay. Thanks, Amanda. We have Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Ann Corman, Chair.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Our committee met on April 25th at 1:30, and we had quite a few things on the agenda, so I'll hit a couple of the highlights. We had several resolutions that passed through on the consent agenda, and then a couple we took off. That we talked about earlier. One of the things on the consent agenda I just wanted to point out was the funding to help get the secure the Bell Station property, which has been a long time in coming. So that was to me a milestone in helping secure that property, that unique natural property. And that was something that the Finger Lakes Land Trust was working on for quite a while with NYSEG. And then they had put it up for sale unbeknownst to them. And then there was, people might remember, there was a lot of groups in the community that worked on that. This legislature worked on it. Our staff worked on it, especially the Department of Planning, and working with the state DEC. We also were lucky to have Assemblyperson Anna Kellis help quite a bit, and Senator Pam Helming. So just wanted to just give a little history there. So glad to see that property is going to be secured very soon. The another highlight is we had a report on glass recycling from Barb Ekstrom at our Recycling and Materials Management Department. And what folks might not know is all of the glass for a couple of years that's been being that you're putting out at the curbside or bringing to the facility in Ithaca, the glass has not been recycled for a number of years for a couple of reasons. One of them having to do with the market dropped out of the glass. The recycling market dropped out, so it wasn't cost effective to try and ship it, and there weren't as many places recycling glass. So many reasons for that, and our glass was processed through Casella, which was eventually the glass was being crushed and used as landfill cover, as an impervious layer that they put, I believe it's each day or very frequently on top of as a layer in the landfills. So it's not the best use, of course, of that material, and the best use would, absolute best use would be for it to be reused. Second would be for it to be recycled. And so now there is, Barb has been working very hard and her staff has been working very hard the last few years trying to find some way for our glass to be recycled. And so they're coming up with a pilot program, which is going to be starting in a week or two. So people might have gotten notices about that. And so you can collect your clean, clear glass separate instead of putting it out at your curb. You could collect it at home and then bring it down to the recycling department. So they're going to do a pilot there, and if it goes well, we'll be able to increase the amount that we'll be able to collect. And that's also hopefully going to be partnered with state regulations that we'd like to see change so that producers are more responsible for making sure that their materials get recycled. And then if they have to make sure their materials get recycled, well, there will be markets. But since it's left up to counties, we're struggling with trying to make sure some of this material is recycled. So I'm glad that pilot program is starting. I've started to collect my clear glass already. Let's see. And when you bring it down, it's going to be right at where the attendant is at the recycling. It'll be right near their booth where you put it because they're going to monitor that closely. Let's see. We awarded some monies. I believe it was $20,000 towards the Reimagining the Workplace Employment Education Series. And we're really happy about that because instead of employees, it being on the onus to employees to try and market their skills and their work history, now, especially this is the perfect environment for the onus to be on the employers to have educate their staff and make their workplaces be more attractive to them by going through several different series of educational things such as diversity and other things. So that so we're really glad that they're going to be doing that. I just lost my page here. We also had a tourism update. We had to ask them to not do a presentation because it was going to be a 26-minute presentation. So we asked them just to send it out to legislators so we could have less time spent on that particular issue. I could go on for several more minutes. I've probably only hit less than half of what we did. So I just want to end with one last thing. Well, actually, two last things. First, I just want to say Scott Doyle will be here for our next month meeting, so I'll thank him again next month. He's leaving the planning department. So I just wanted to say, I mentioned it to our chair, Shauna Black, I'd like some consideration to be able to have enough time to really work on and talk about the issues in departments and boards that come before our committee. We've never been able so far almost every single time we've gone over time. Last time we went over half an hour over our allotted time, and we had to cut things short and ask people to not present on things. So we just need to sit down and try and figure out how to best be able to work through that.
Okay. Thanks, Ann. Randy Brown?
Yes, I don't have a question, but there was a lot of information there, and it could have been another hour easy. I received an email, and Barb Ekstrom was also a copy of that, from a company called Zero Waste, and apparently they're doing some collection of clear glass at Cornell and other places, they're communicating directly with Barb. The company that they're using is a company called Tomra, Tomra, and they're a European company, and I think that's also the company that Barb's planning on working with. Mm-hmm. The CEO is the executive of those companies. It's woman run, they're out of New York, but it is a European-owned company. So I think that there's some good ideas they have. They're collecting clear glass in other parts of the county, and hopefully they can work directly with Barb to make that program better.
Okay. Greg Mezzi?
I just want to sort of echo what I think everybody was saying, too, about the amount of information that gets processed, I think, through the committee PDEC. It would be also really helpful, and I just sort of want to put this out there, too, for folks that are making presentations to the committee, to try to get that information and those presentations to us in advance when possible. I know that it just allows us to spend some additional time to really try to absorb that information in advance, to keep to a timely meeting. I think it allows for better discussion. Yeah. So, Lisa and Amy and everybody in county administration and the clerks, I know you guys are really trying to get as much information ahead of time as possible. But it's really helpful for as much as we can get in advance so that we can digest and we're not digesting that in the moment, so that we can use that 2 hours most efficiently and respect everybody's time. Because if need to, I wouldn't oppose to making that meeting longer, just because I do think that there's a lot of information that we're just failing to get or to have discussion around because we are so pressed for time. And much of the information, sometimes comes just when the person shares their screen. So I want to just sort of put that out there and back up what Ann's saying, that it is a robust committee, and I think we knew this when we consolidated two committees, but I think we're living the reality of that now, and we're trying to make that work. So anything that those presenting to that committee can do to be helpful would be really appreciated.
Yeah, and Deb and I will discuss with Lisa. I think there are some different management things that maybe we could talk to Annie about, because I went back and watched the meeting, and there was a lot of conversation that I think could have taken a crisper detour. Maybe we can help with that. The other thing that I think is really important, and I know that we talked about this at the beginning of the year, was actually moving your resolutions up to the top of your meeting if you're a committee chair, so that your staff can attend the meeting at the very beginning. Asking a staff member to be at a meeting for 2.5 hours is really a large portion of their day, and I think it's really taxing on them. So we need to be considerate of that. So Deb and I will work with Ann
and who's the vice chair? Is it Greg? And, you know, we could brainstorm on some different ideas, and you know, I'm certainly not opposed to moving. If things need to move from one committee to another to provide balance, we can do that. But I would really like to keep it at 2 hours, because I think, you know, Rich has said this a million times, once you hit over 2 hours, everyone's brain is mush. He didn't say it in those words, but so let's plan on getting together over the next week or so. Any questions for Ann? Deb Dawson?
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on this discussion about how to handle the vast quantity of information that PDAC has to process. One thing that happened at this meeting was that we had an annual report from the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and they submitted a video in advance for us to watch. I don't know that everyone watched it, because then the whole purpose of that was defeated when we went through a long discussion and presentation from the CVB. But, you know, if people and departments could get the information to us and get their PowerPoint slides to us in advance, personally, I would prefer to spend that extra time prepping with materials that were provided in advance, so that we could limit our discussion in committees to things we really needed to talk about. And maybe provide questions in advance so that people came prepared to talk about the things we were really needing to know. It would shorten the meetings considerably.
Great. Thanks, Deb. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Let's move on to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Deb Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a special meeting today, at which we considered three resolutions, the first of which was Resolution O, Establishment of 2023 County Financial Goal, ID 10904, and I would move that.
Seconded by Mike Lane.
Thank you. This resolution merely formalizes the consensus that we reached at our budget retreat last week, I think, yes, to set the preliminary target for the county administrator's budget at 1.88% tax levy increase. And while we're considering this, I want to thank everybody who came to the budget presentation. Lisa gave us an excellent presentation. We had a robust discussion, and I appreciated the fact that we have five legislators who haven't gone through a budget season before, and they participated very intelligently in our conversation.
Okay. Any questions for Deb? Comments about the resolution? Okay. Let's move forward with a roll call vote.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
With 12 ayes, 2 noes.
Thank you.
Okay, and our next resolution is P, Establishment of Guidelines and Fiscal Targets for All County Budgeting Units for the Preparation of the 2023 Budget, ID 10907, and I move that.
Seconded by Rich John. Deb, would you like to talk to this resolution?
I would really think that Lisa might be a better person to explain this exactly. So I'm going to let her do that if she doesn't mind.
Okay.
Be glad to. So this resolution enables the county administrator to basically enact the target increase that was that you just voted on, and translate that into departmental budgeting units so that the organization can then move forward with the budgeting that the departmental budgeting that will result in the recommended budget to the legislature.
Okay. Any questions for Deborah or Lisa? Okay. Let's do a roll call vote.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
12 ayes, 2 noes.
Thank you.
And finally, we have Resolution 2, Appropriation from Contingent Fund, Purchase of Department Vehicle, Department of Probation and Community Justice. And I move that.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Rich John.
I apologize. I didn't realize that this was this time sensitive. I had been given to understand that this would go through public safety as well as BCP. But be that as it may, apparently back in 2021, we had budgeted money for probation to buy a second van. And because of the pandemic and supply chain issues, et cetera, they were unable to finalize that purchase. And then, of course, we did change our rollover policy. So the money for this particular vehicle is going to have to come out of the contingent fund. Next year, I understand we will have a somewhat more streamlined ability to approve these funds out of the Green Fleet Capital Fund with a centralized procurement mechanism. But for now, we need to take $32,152.91 out of contingent funds so that probation can buy a second.
Thank you, Deb. Any questions or comments for Deb or the resolution? Rich John?
Just for clarity, this was considered by public safety when it first came through in 2021, so I'm pretty comfortable that the public safety committee, as constituted then, didn't see any problem with it.
So. Thanks, Rich. That's good to know.
Thanks, Deb.
Any other questions or comments? Let's do a roll call vote.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Any other report, Deb?
No, we have a BCP meeting, a regular meeting, this coming Monday. And it doesn't look to be a particularly special agenda.
Okay. Any questions for Deborah Dawson? I see none. Thanks, Deb. Next is Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Granison, Chair.
Yes, we met last week, although I was not at the meeting. Maybe Ann or Veronica can fill us in about what happened during the meeting. If not, I can do it in 2 weeks.
You know what? Let's do it. We'll have you update in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, Veronica?
I wasn't prepared, so I don't remember, but I can say one valuable thing was we started out with former chair and co-founder of the committee, Lesmond McBean Claiborne, giving a little recap of the history of the WDIC committee. That was really helpful for me. That was right up top and might be worth checking out.
Great. Thank you. Okay, Henry, we'll hear from you in 2 weeks, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Last but not least, we have some minutes of our previous meeting, April 19th, 2022. If I can have a mover, please. Moved by Veronica, seconded by Randy Brown. Any questions, comments, corrections? I see none. Let's do a roll call vote.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay. If I could have a mover to adjourn. Moved by everyone. Seconded by everyone. All those in favor?
Everyone.
Everyone. Have a good night.
Good night.
Recording stopped.